Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome back to A Celtic State of Mind. I'm Paul John Dykes. It's Friday afternoon. Have you got that Friday feeling? I certainly do. And I'm joined today by Brian Degnan, Jim Orr and Lloyd Patrick Jepson. It's something of a dream team. Thanks every single one of you for joining us. I'm going to come straight to the boys down the bottom. Sorry, Brian. I know that geographically you couldn't be with us last night, but we managed to spend a bit of time in the same room as each other, Jim. Lloyd, cracking night with the blessed Martin O'Neill. How good was he?
Sensational. Absolutely. I would have said the word extraordinary, but that's Martin's word, so I'll just go with sensational.
Sensational was the word used on part of the video reel that we played midway through the first half. And it's incredible, Jim, when you look back to the arrival of Martin, that speech he gave on the steps of Celtic Park, and then what happened in that first season and everything afterwards. But the video focused on, you know, Sutton and the 6-2 game, and Larson and Petro. Sensational evening, as Lloyd says, but he is an extraordinary character, as Martin O'Neill, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, that's the third time I've seen him, and I think he's turning into Woody Allen. Basically, he's stand-up routines and making up fictitious stories and pretending to talk Swedish. It's just kind of, I think he's got a whole act of his own these days. So, expertly hosted by Mr. Dykes, who hugged Martin O'Neill at the end. So
He's got a cuddle.
He's actually now in hug status with regard to Martin O'Neill. Imagine who Martin O'Neill must have hugged in the past. So Dykes is in there.
Eusebio.
He took his shorts, which is another kind of, took a serious turn, that story. A lot of the Axiom guys there last night, Lloyd, Lawrence, Jerry, Asim. Who else was there?
Chris was there as well.
Chris Double Denham with wife. Dragged on his poor
Mrs.
wife.
Double Denham was there.
Mrs. Double Denham was there. That's a real name. And JP was there, I never saw him. But yeah, a number of people came across to say how much they enjoyed Axiom. So that was good as well. But yeah, he's a top man, Martin. And you listen to him all night because he has so many tales to tell. And that's the thing about his book. His book's so kind of matter of fact. Mm-hmm. You know, he kind of like leaves school, scores against Barcelona, goes down south, goes across to England, scores in his debut, scores at Old Trafford, bang, bang, wins the European Cup, he goes to Celtic. In fact, I think the Celtic part of his book only accounts for about a fifth, something like that, possibly. Mm-hmm. You know, so he's done all this other stuff as well. So he's a very charismatic individual, is Martin. I saw on Twitter this morning, he's now the chair of the League Managers Association, so that's quite a prestigious gig. So obviously, he's recognised by his peers as well. But yeah, he's always worth listening to. And a great venue, the Bar is Art and Design. Really cool venue. So, yeah, all in all, a really good night. And, good stuff.
Looking forward to the next one. You're right. There was a tremendous roll call of Axiom contributors and viewers. A lot of people coming up and speaking to us. And let me tell you, it is not lost on us. It's great to hear in first person the fact that you tune in, you enjoy it, you love the debate. You comment live or you listen to this walking the dog or on the treadmill, whatever it is. I think what we've done, you get a sense of it last night. You build a wee community. There's a wee, you know, there's a vibe in these nights where everybody's in it together. Yes, we can disagree, but at the end of the night, all you want is the best for Celtic. And I'll tell you something, the reason that I love that speech on the steps of Celtic Park, Jim, I'll come back to you just for a moment, is it's the same steps that just a few years earlier Brian Dempsey and Fergus McCann stood on those steps in the rain. And there's such a contrast between that scene 30 years ago now and the Martin O'Neill scene and the sunshine and the optimism that was shown. And I used the words and, you know, I said that, did you feel obliged? Was there an obligation for you to turn this into a successful football club? And Martin said he felt that there was an obligation, didn't he?
I think football was a simple game. You pick the right manager, you give yourself the best chance of going forward. At the time, he was the outstanding candidate. And was it Goose Hiddink? Was he the other potential one? So, I mean, how might things have worked out if it was Goose Hiddink? But he was the best man for the job at the time. And the 6-2 game, that kind of put down a marker and things went from there. And, you know, you look at sliding doors kind of stuff. If it had lost that game and won 6-2, maybe it would have turned out differently. And even after the 6-2 game, we horse 5-1 Ibrox.
Yeah,
so that was a bit of a setback. So, I mean, manager is such an interesting job. But he'll tell stories about how you signed Neil Lennon and taking a chance in Sutton when he had such a horrible season at Chelsea, taking a chance in Alan Thompson. So he's got a kind of good instincts about him, Martin O'Neill. And, just a really nice guy. He said charismatic, best man for the job at the time. Great years. I mean, I've said before a number of times, for me, Celtic's all about Europe. And that's the real season was, as I said, in the last 50 years, that's sort of the best season ever, even though we won nothing. But it was the journey in getting there. And as Martin O'Neill put us on the map, and we play against any team and we feared no one at Celtic Park, certainly. And you feel confident going abroad as well. And that's in stark contrast to most of the last 20 years where, you know, you're hiding by the couch or two couches sometimes. He brought self-belief to the club. Mm-hmm. And I'd imagine any Celtic fans who lived through that over the last 30, 40 years would have said that's been the best period, even though, you know, since they won 9 in a row and the quadruple trebles. But you have to put it into context that the opposition were top quality, albeit how they paid them is another story altogether. But we had to be on top of our game, and he got us on top of our game. And just such a giant within the game, not just within Celtic, but a giant in football as well. And getting back to being the sort of first Catholic captain of Northern Ireland, that was a huge thing mm-hmm. to take on. And he'd done really well in that World Cup, which I can remember vividly. And he tells a funny story that they've managed to qualify for the round robin stages, and the Irish FA didn't think they were going to do that. So no place to go, no place to stay, no flights. You know, so yeah, he's a good guy. We love Martin O'Neill.
The way that he did that and then turned it around to say, you know, and Roy Keane left the camp because the training bibs didn't arrive. Imagine how he would have reacted that there was a flight back to Belfast, even though they had qualified. One thing, I really loved the tales, obviously, and everything else, but it brought back to my mind a wee story, lads, that I'll share with you. I think I've mentioned it before, but it's going back to that 1982 World Cup, and everybody will remember the performance of that great side under Billy Bingham. But I don't know if you remember this, Jim, you probably do because you've always had a keen eye on international football, but Billy Bingham's assistant was Bertie Peacock at that time. And Bertie, as an experienced player, played with a very young Bobby Murdoch at Celtic. And, you know, leading up to the 1982 World Cup finals, Bobby Murdoch was in charge of Middlesbrough, having gone down there, having been freed by Jock Stein, some say too soon. He went down and became something of a legend down at Middlesbrough, and he became the manager there. And so Bertie Peacock contacted Bobby Murdoch and said, you know, we've got someone, we want to get him fit because we believe that he can do something for us at the World Cup finals. And that player, of course, was George Best. And George Best had been playing over in the States. And back then, it wasn't what we're looking at now in terms of the competitive edge of the MLS. You know, I don't underestimate the league at all. Back then, it was more of a kind of showbiz league, and they were bringing in all the big names and all that.
It was a retirement home, yeah.
It was a retirement home for all the big names, Jim, wasn't it? And also loads of ex-pros in Britain who probably were at the end of their game, but they could go over there and still get a game. And Best had been over there. He wasn't the fittest. So Bertie Peacock wanted Bobby Murdoch to take him in at Middlesbrough. Middlesbrough were in a relegation dogfight for 6 months and get him fit because they believed that if they took him to the World Cup in 82, he wouldn't start the games. But just being behind the scenes and maybe coming on for 20, 30 minutes. And I always think back to that story, Brian, the fact that George Best never graced the world stage, but there was that chance. And you know the reason that George Best didn't go to Middlesbrough? His Miss World girlfriend at the time said she didn't fancy moving from the States to Middlesbrough. And that's the reason he didn't do it. And that's the reason he never played in the World Cup finals. That's just typical Bestie, is it not?
Sliding doors, yeah, sliding doors.
It's amazing. It always reminds me of that quote, and I think I'm probably paraphrasing because it's one of those ones that's in the ether, but he said, somebody asked him one time, what did you do with all your money? And he says, well, spent it in fast cars and women. The rest of it I just wasted.
Mm-hmm.
Love that. Love
the rest of it, I just squandered. Yeah, he was the original bad boy, wasn't he? No, but the reason we're talking about Martin is we will tie it into now, because he came to Celtic at a point where we were obviously aware of the fact that we hadn't been the dominant force for some time. Obviously, we had everything in place with regards to the stadium and the finances, but we're in better financial health now than we were then. But back then, we were prepared to spend, Brian, and spend Martin O'Neill did. He brought ready-made players. A lot of them came from the Premiership, obviously, down south, on the big wages, on the big English wages as well, Brian. And we really did make an effort to progress in Europe. And we almost, as Jim said, we almost did that in 2003. However, there was a couple of other really good runs. I mean, there was one season in the Champions League where Martin O'Neill's team won 9 points and didn't qualify from the group. So we really were punching at our weight, not punching above our weight. But the end of that kind of scenario in that era was that we then started downsizing and spending a lot less for a number of years, Brian. And I do feel that we're still in that frame of mind. We're talking right now. If we went into the summer right now, Brian, right, and we signed a player for $6 million, a la Chris Sutton, a player for something like $5 or $6 million in Neil Lennon, another one for $4.5 million, as we did with Alan Thompson, we'd be sitting here absolutely delighted at that. But that was in 2000. That was 24 years ago we were doing that, Brian. So I think we need to find a middle ground where we're not going to stretch ourselves to the point where it becomes actually a bit risky financially, but we're not going to do everything on the cheap.
No, you're right. And I think there's a few things to unpack there. So when you talk about Martin O'Neill coming in, one of the things that I think has been so important about that campaign in particular, the Seville campaign, was that the mentality shift at Celtic, which I think we've sort of read the coattails almost since, because the whole attitude changed of what it was to play for Celtic, to be Celtic, to win. And we started winning and winning well, and the demands were getting better. So even when Gordon Strachan came in after Martin had left and they were sort of downsizing a little bit, we got to the last 16 in the Champions League twice in the bounce, and then once under Neil Lennon after. So it did sort of maintain and we dominated domestically. But then, to your point, what happened was the transfer policy, transfer mentality sort of changed. Now, on your point about the players, Martin O'Brien, it wasn't just the money he spent, it was the type of player. So they were a huge physical team,
yeah,
you know, powerful, yeah, strong, fast, experienced. They knew how to do it. There was such a competitive edge. Like, you always hear stories of ex-players talking about that team and how intense training was and how they were always at each other to improve. And that cultural shift maintained for a while. But that's when it's dropped off. I keep saying on here, and I've said it loads of times, and I'll say it again, it's not necessarily the amount you're spending, it's how you're spending it. So to your point, we spend $6 million now. $6 million is not a lot of money anymore in terms of football, which sounds crazy to say, right? But if you equate that, you say you're spending like $12 million on a player, it still has to be the right player for the right team. Still have to have the right qualities to do it. So, like, look at the guys we signed in the summer, and I'm not going to go on about the recruitment for the summer again particularly, but we were all saying we need guys that we need that athleticism for Europe, because we've got technical players and we've got a style of play that might work, and Brendan's canny enough that he can sort of, you know, make tactical changes throughout it and might get a result here. But if you've got guys that can't track back fast enough, if you've got guys that can't hold the ball because they're not strong enough, if you've got guys that can't win the ball in the air because they're not tall enough, like, we're not signing the right type of player. And that's what Martin did at the time. He identified and he spoke well about Rangers when he joined, if you remember as well.
Yeah.
Always did. They were the benchmark. He respected them as a team. And that was the right thing to do. And he said, right, to compete against them and compete in Europe, we need to get bigger, stronger, more experienced. And that's what he did. So what do we need to do in this window? And what do we do coming up? We need to go, right, what do we need? What type of player do we need? And then we look at how much we're spending to get them. Because, as I've said before as well, it doesn't matter. You know, we'll never get the same players as Man City or as Barcelona or whoever, right? Because we can't pay the wages for that type of player. But there's no reason we can't have the data guys and the scouts and pay money to that side and identify these guys before they go there and have the bravery to take a chance on some players, provided they fit the profile.
No, you're right there. And you know, the physical aspect of it, I don't think Martin O'Neill wanted to be bullied. And he was coming up, obviously, from an English game where the athleticism is almost a given. Every team you play, you know, at every age level, even when you remember back, you know, to tournaments where you would play an English team, for example, as a youth, you would be up against guys that appeared to be 5 years older than you, but they were the same age, and the physicality was incredible at that time. Probably down to the diet, Lloyd, of a breakfast of Cocoa Pops rather than whatever they were filling themselves full of. But in relation to that, I think one of the examples is we had a guy in Starfelt, for example, right, who cost us something in the region. And by the way, the figures that you get are, you know, there or thereabouts. It's never exact. And even when you're looking at sometimes into the accounts of football clubs, it's hard to know exactly how much a player costs. But it was between £4 and £4.5 million for a player like Starfelt. Now, we paid the same for Navroski. Now, what did you get for Starfelt? Well, you got two seasons. We're two back-to-back league wins, a double and a treble. And what have you got for Navroski? You've got a guy who's been in and out of the side, Lloyd. I've been reading reports this morning about doubts around his fitness. Now, on the back of what Brendan Rodgers was saying to some of the fans and investors during the week in relation to the fact that, you know, some of these moves were already way down the line, he couldn't really intervene. It wouldn't have been a good idea to come out of that transfer window with no players. So he has trusted the due diligence of the recruitment team. It's going to be a massive focus in the summer, though, Lloyd, isn't it? And I mean, it's not just the data of the player, is it? It is the personality, the characteristics, and the stature, because we've got a big issue at the moment, haven't we, on the left-hand side of defence, Lloyd? A big part of that is we're bullied. Every team, even the ninth-best team in Scotland, are bullying us on the left-hand side and just playing balls into them.
Yeah, exactly. And you look at last weekend with two Aberdeen's goals, they got balls whipped in to that left-hand side, and they're not dealt with at all for either Scales or Taylor. So you look at that, and obviously you're saying about Narowski not really being replaced in Starfelt. The thing with Starfelt is Starfelt had more pace. He had a good relationship with Carter Vickers.
Yeah.
So you break that up, bring these guys in. I mean, you basically brought two guys in just to replace the one. But it's, like you're saying there, Paul, it's a mentality shift for these players. The characteristics of them, mm-hmm. Are they the right characteristics of the players that we had before? Because I know Ange always used to speak about, and I think Martin O'Neill kind of falls into that bracket as well, it wasn't just the type of player that they were, it was the type of person. And I think that's a big thing in football with these things, because if you bring somebody in with a winner's mentality, then they know fine well what the job in the remit is. It's to win titles, it's to win cups. If you bring someone in who's just kind of just starting out in the game, or else a young guy, then they're not really going to have that. So they're kind of just starting on their pathway in their career. So this is kind of where the summer recruitment is going to be important.
Massive.
But before that, we've got a league title and a cup to win, and that's going to be even more important.
Can I just say, though, we started off the show, Lloyd, and you had some pretty natty headgear on. And I've got to say, you do suit that. And I know that
I did walk around with one all night last night as well, so I don't know if anyone noticed that at all.
I did.
Lloyd, you missed it. So what you meant to do is say things like, I am now drinking from an Axel mug. Things taste better with Axel.
Well, like that?
I clearly briefed you guys to do this, right? Look at that. Simultaneous. Look at that. Brilliant.
And that's why you put your hat on and you make a comment.
Right. Let's get some of these comments coming in. We've started off with Martin O'Neill. We know it was a long time ago, but we're talking about strategies. We're talking about recruitment and how things have changed. We've got to realise that things have changed. Absolutely, we do. We're in rude financial health. I keep using that. There's the klaxon. But we need to do it in such a way that I'm at a stage in my life, Jim, and I don't know if this is just a natural thing with age, whereby it used to be one or the other. But now I'm thinking, why not have both, right? So you can be financially secure, but still spend big when necessary. Surely we can do that, Jim. Surely we can compete, but also make sure that the bottom line is healthy. I think we're in a position where we can do that.
I agree with Brian. I think it's how you spend your money. It's not what you spend. And I think, you know, good examples at the moment are Bernardo and Ida. And the number seems to be £6 million. So can you get better value for £6 million? Discuss. But something you said earlier, Paul, which I have no idea what's happening at Celtic Park. Obviously, I don't know, but I don't buy this the manager said, well, these things are quite far on. You know, acting haste, repent and leisure. You know, if I'm the manager and I've come in there and then somebody said, we're about to sign this guy, and you sit and look at the stats and you say, nah, he's not for me.
He can't run. Yeah, can't. The stats will tell you that. Yeah.
So I don't buy this. Either he wasn't involved and it was a kind of fait accompli, or he was involved and he didn't do the due diligence. I don't want to be negative today because we've a lead to win. So come the end of the season, we can debate all this kind of stuff. But yeah, you need to do your due diligence in this stuff, and it's about using the money wisely, you know. And I think the market has changed. We can't go down to the EPL and buy a Chris Sutton or an Alan Thompson. Did you know that would be tens of millions of pounds? So where you shop, we're very dependent on that. We can't shop in the EPL, and sometimes we can't shop in the Championship, which we could have done 23 years ago. That was doable then. But what was the question about who we buy? I just feel as if that what happened over the summer is where we are just now. And we're in this title race, and this is usual, it's a two-horse race, as usual. And then what they tend to do in horse racing is, to make it an even race, they tend to handicap the better horse, put some more weight on the horse. And that's what we've done, I think, all season. We put weight on ourselves to make it more difficult to win this league in terms of who we brought in.
Yeah.
Some of the manager's decisions, his substitutions, his team selections, his tactics. You know, I think we've kind of handicapped ourselves this season. And we're in this dead exciting title race. I said the other week, embrace it. Enjoy it. Because it's dead exciting. I mean, Sunday, we'll get Super Sunday. Both games are on that afternoon. They're both live on the TV. So how we've got here is what you're alluding to there. That's a much bigger debate on that. But we're here where we are. Because I think last time I was on was before the Livy game, and I think we'd like 8 games to go and a trip to Ibrox in there, and the 3-1 games in hand, they'd be something like 2 points ahead. So you thought, well, this may be difficult. But now things have changed. We're now thought to win the next 3 games. We've won the league with a home Glasgow derby with no away fans. We're in a different place now.
Yeah.
But that's not been completely over our making, because the main rivals have stumbled. You know, so if we do win this league, I think, you know, it's the least worst of the two teams that's going to win this league, because this for me, this has been a pretty forgettable season compared to last season and the season before. And in fact, I would say we're kind of 60-40 winning this league, because we don't know what kind of Celtic is going to turn up. And if we had last year's team and last year's manager in a 3-point advantage, I'd be supremely confident with Jota and Starfield, you mentioned there, Moy and Yakimakis and Uran. You know, you'd be dead confident. I'm not confident. But I think that's a bigger debate come the finishing line, once we go over, hopefully over that finishing line.
Yeah, you're right. And by the way, I don't think what you're saying is negative, Jim. I think it's very realistic. I mean, just about everything now is deemed to be negative. You disagree with someone, you're being negative. No, I don't think what you've said there is. I think it's actually looking at the season in its entirety and saying, we know what the Celtic side's like. We know what they're capable of, but we know that sometimes they don't turn up. We know sometimes that during a game, they just can't get into a rhythm. And that does concern me at times. The one thing that Ken McCluskey and I speak a lot about on match day at halftime is don't panic. Next 10, 15 minutes are absolutely key to how this game's going to finish. And I think there's going to be some ropey moments at the halftime break, Brian, where we're thinking, wow, you know, we need to win this, and it's nothing each. One thing before I move on from the Martin O'Neill, we're going to be talking about the team from back to front, and we're actually going to be looking at the bigger picture, not only who starts at the weekend, but what we do moving forward. Do they need replaced? How we're going to do it? What's it going to cost? One thing I would say about Martin O'Neill, I've seen a lot of dialogue, not just after last night, but about, oh, but you know, he had money, it was easy for him, etc. I'm going to make a point here about people that required a certain amount of belief from the gaffer, a certain amount of development, because, you know, people don't regard Martin O'Neill as a tracksuit manager. You know, he had his coaching team that worked with the guys as it was Barrowfield back then. And then obviously he would come in maybe a day or two before the game and he would be there on match day. And Martin O'Neill said last night, I found this interesting, the dressing room was his. I found that very interesting, because Ange was the opposite, wasn't it? The dressing room is the domain of the players. The dressing room is Martin's. But one thing, I'm just going to make this point here. Let me know in the comments. So I feel that there was a crop of players in that Celtic side that he inherited and got the best out of. But also, there was a couple of guys that came in who didn't have the best of times prior to came to Celtic. So the names I'm going to throw out, tell me if you agree or disagree. I think there's an obvious one in Stan Petrov. I don't think we've really seen the Petrov that we grew to love until O'Neill was in charge. He made a change of position for Johan Mialbi, and what we saw with Mialbi under Martin O'Neill, I believe, was the best version of Johan Mialbi. I'm going to throw this one out, but I realise it's maybe one for debate. Lubo, did we see the best of Lubo under Martin O'Neill? I think we've definitely seen the best of Jackie McNamara. And I know that I loved watching Jackie under Tommy Burns, but he didn't play for a successful team under Tommy. We only won the one trophy, and that was before Jackie arrived. So they're the guys within the hub that I felt he improved. But you look at John Hartson. John Hartson couldn't pass a medical when Celtic signed him. I think he'd failed three. There's one that springs to mind in particular, but I think he failed three. And you know this, he failed his medical at Celtic as well. And Martin O'Neill had the belief in him. He says to him, unless you've got a hole in your heart, I'm signing you. And he actually signed him, even though he failed his medical. So he showed a belief in John Hartson. And I tell the story about Chris Sutton and Alan Thompson. In the FA Cup final the previous season, it was Aston Villa against Chelsea. And from memory, I think Chelsea won 1-0. Was it Gianfranco Zola that maybe scored the goal? And both Thompson and Sutton were unused that day. So Sutton was a £12 million striker. He wasn't even used in the FA Cup final. I'm not even sure if he was stripped. He might have sat on the bench. But after the game, Tomo of Aston Villa, who didn't play, Sutton of Chelsea, who didn't play, shared a beer after the game. And basically, the pair of them were on the scrap heap of English football. Martin O'Neill signs them for Celtic and turns their world around. So I don't think it was as simple as just chucking money and hoping that it worked, Brian. I think that Martin doesn't seem to get the credit that he was due for being somebody that can tap into a player's mentality and psyche, actually make them feel a bit better about themselves and get the best out of them as well.
Absolutely. And I think as well, the recurring theme whenever we talk about the sort of Celtic greats and Celtic managers, Martin has also been one of them, is that sort of character and that installation. You can see guys grow in confidence. They've got that thing of, we're not getting beat today. You've got guys that can dig it out. Like, you know, we speak about leaders a lot, and it is something we lack in this current squad, I think. But interestingly, what links, I think a lot of managers, we mentioned Postecoglou, Strachan, Martin O'Neill, and obviously Brendan Rodgers. But I think when you look at these guys, it's the type of player. So there's a perfect storm. So it's like the player at the right time in his career, the right club and the right manager, and they all have to coalesce for a sign to be successful. And if you look at, say, I'll mention Strachan again, Lloyd made a good point about character. I remember Gary Caldwell was interviewed one time, and he talked about Gordon Strachan would have character days where he would basically torment and torture the players with these runs because he was a fitness fanatic. Mm-hmm. And the ones that saw it through, no matter how much they were struggling, were the guys he knew he could rely on when the chips were down. And that's why, and a lot of the guys Strachan signed, these most successful signings were obviously Scott Brown, the guys like Paul Hartley, Barry Robson. Mm-hmm. He was also spending big money on Yuri Yarasik, Thomas Gravesen. So you can see there that it's no, to your point, it's not just the amount of money, or even the player, it's the type of player at the right time with the right gaffer. And on that subject, we've mentioned Starfelt a few times. I know I certainly did, and I'm sure a lot of us did. Most of last season, the season before, we said we need to upgrade on Starfelt. Mm-hmm. Now, I know since he's left, he's become Beckenbauer in everybody's eyes because of what we're playing with this season. But the reality is, even then we said, good player, but we need better. There's a mistake in him. We need a better partner for Carter Vickers. Mm-hmm. We don't have that this season. Actually, now we're going, geez, I'm more, could we get Starfelt back?
Yeah, no.
So that sort of personifies almost how far we've fallen in terms of squad thing. But here's the positive on that, to Jim's point about getting through at the end of the season. People were sort of getting, Scales was getting a lot of criticism. They're like, why is Scales scarp instead of Naroski or whatever? But I think I think Roger sees these guys and thinks, when we're chips are down, when we're up against it, we're under pressure, I can rely on these guys. Maybe he doesn't feel that way with some of the other guys, and that's why they're getting picked. Do I think Scales is the best centre-half in the world? Absolutely not. Do I think we need to sign another one? Absolutely. However, I get the impression, and I think it goes back to the first Glasgow derby this season where we won, when everybody was writing us off, when it's Scales and Welsh, I think, at centre-half.
Lager Bielke was playing.
Lager.
But he said, you know, it's these guys, I asked them, you need to be men, you need to stand up and be counted.
Yeah.
And I think that if you look at Martin O'Neill, Strachan, Lennon, Postecoglou, Rogers, these guys have had that. The Fid players have stood up for them and they'll have people that they rely on. And I think that's where we spoke about it before the Kilmarnock game a while back, Paul, and we get slated for it. Because we said this very thing, I've been critical of Rogers for most of the season, but when he needs to win, when his back's against the wall, that's the best version of him. And I think that's where we can get the results. And so far, it's proved to be correct. I hope it's correct at the end of the season.
That's why I don't understand the Lager-Bielke thing, because that was a massive game. And he played a bit, I think he made one mistake in the game and almost cost a goal, but I thought he was really, really good that day. I don't understand how he's been treated since. And
It must be a person, there must be something between him and Rogers. Maybe there's like his attitude, maybe there's something, because I agree with you. Even I think, was it the game he came on as well?
Feyenoord scored,
but there's another game he came on and he done really well. He had a shaky start.
I don't think he's let us down at all, and I really don't understand that one. And that's why I was saying about.
That's why I think it must be a mentality thing. There must be something that Rogers.
That's why I was saying. I think we've handicapped ourselves this season, because he was a good big centre half, and give him a run of games and see what he's like. Because the manager thought Nat Phillips was a better option. Mm-hmm. So you then think, well, do we trust your judgment with centre half if you think Nat Phillips is better than Lagerbielke? You know. So anyway, that's a bit negative.
No, it's again, I don't think it is, Jim. We'll start off in that position, though, because one of the big decisions facing Brendan Rodgers ahead of the trip to Dundee, which is going to be the second fixture in terms of the title race anyway, on Sunday at 3 o'clock, will be who partners Cameron Carter-Vickers at centre-half. So you brought the point up, Brian, and I think that, you know, we do talk about Starfelt, but you're right, he was criticised whilst he was here, right? And I think the thing that handicapped Starfelt was the fact that he wasn't a naturally left-sided defender, and he was always playing on the left-hand side, and often I felt that he was second-guessing himself. He took an extra touch because he had to get it to his strong foot. He had to change his body shape at times, and I don't think that worked in his favour, yet he had a brilliant partnership with Carter Vickers. And now we're looking at a situation where, although we brought in three, as Jim rightly says, you forget sometimes that Nat Phillips came in, Lagerbielke, Navroski. We brought in three. Starfelt's been replaced by Liam Scales. Now, if going into the pre-season, Lloyd, you were told that the treble winners were going to replace, they were going to sell Starfelt, right? Get your money back with a wee bit of profit, and we were going to play Scales there. I don't think many Celtic fans would have been happy with that. I don't think anyone would have seen it as progressive. On the flip side, not to be negative, I think Liam Scales has had what could only be described as a breakthrough season for him in terms of Celtic. He's been discussed, and this is where I'm going to go back to Brian's point, and this is why I think he always plays. He's been discussed by Brendan Rodgers as being something of a unique situation in his entire coaching career. It's like the best example of the scenario that he's ever seen, and it's Liam Scales. He obviously regards him as somebody he can rely on. But there are frailties there, Lloyd. And we saw them again against Aberdeen. And it is a big concern for me. I mean, Dundee can target that left-hand side just like Aberdeen did. Dundee are a better side than Aberdeen.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing. I think it comes down to Brendan trusts Scales more than what he does Navrotsky or Lagerbielke in that aspect. Because, as you quite rightly said, that Scales has basically played most of the season. So, obviously, Brendan's seen things on the training ground or characteristics and mentality skills that he feels he should always be starting. Yeah, it does have some defensive frailties, but what it also makes up in other areas as well. Does he win headers of the ball? Yeah. Is he best at his feet? Probably not. Is he good at covering Taylor? Yeah. But the thing is, we're always going to be critical one way or another, because we all know Carter Vickers is the best defender. But very rarely when he makes a mistake, we don't really criticise him either. But it's always the partner that gets it. So it was either Starfelt, Scales, so on and so on. So to me, yeah, Scales will play, because once again, he had a bad game last weekend, but Brendan will throw him back in. He trusts him. And basically, he's got a chance to redeem himself for the last week.
See, that's a good point, Lloyd, right? Because apparently, against Aberdeen, Carter Vickers did not have a good game. And after the match, I went on about how great he was, right? And it's one of these things, Jim, you do have biases as a football fan, as a Celtic fan. They get picked up on pretty quickly in the comment section because you've got a great cross section. Right now, we've got 1,200, I'm going to say Celtic fans in the comment section. Sometimes there's a few trolls that slip through the net. And there's a great cross section, Jim, of Celtic supporters to get an idea of what the feeling is around a certain player or a certain performance. So after the game against Aberdeen, I thought Carter Vickers had been like a warrior, throwing his body on the line, blocking things, winning headers, balls off the line. But very quickly, I realised everybody else disagreed with me. So that's a bias I must have, Jim, whereby Carter Vickers never plays bad. It's always his partner that plays bad. What do you think about Scales, though? Are we at the point now where we've got five games in the league, a Scottish Cup final, it's all about winning. The winning might be a battle. The winning might require us to score three goals a game, if I've already noticed and mentioned. Because we do have the frailties at the back, Jim, is it too late to do anything other than play Scales?
I don't think it's too late. I mean, I think the big issue this year has not been defence, it's been attack. It's the fact that we're missing chance after chance after chance. I think the defence has been all right in terms of, you know, numbers of goals lost, all that kind of stuff. Just to back on the Starfield thing, I think the Starfield was much maligned. I was a big supporter of the Starfield. People say he's got a mistake in him. What if players got a mistake in him? He put his head on the line, put his foot on the line. He was just a bounding defender. It didn't suit Ange's system. We had to play with the ball, but I thought he was much maligned. Tell us what happens next. You always play your best players. I like Narowski. I think what I've seen in Narowski is a bit more physicality than Liam Scales. He plays the ball much quicker than Liam Scales. I think, was it not the second goal in the derby? He was the guy that hit the ball really quickly through and one or two passes with him, bank, he always scored. So I always play your best players, and if they can't last 90 minutes, then give them 70 minutes or whatever. My acid test is always, are the players who play for Celtic too good to play for other Scottish teams? You know, so Carter Vickers, he's too good to play for Hibs, he's too good to play for Aberdeen.
Yeah.
Liam Scales, you know, don't think he's too good to play for Hibs and Aberdeen. You know, so that's my, and nothing against the boy. I think he's been immense this season and he's been called upon for most of the season here, but we do need a wee bit better. Again, tactically, what's our tactics? Because we lost last week, nobody stopped the cross. Come in, you take off James Forrest, he's no right winger, and the guy that all the space in Hamden, pick a ball, you know. So it's not always down to the defenders, it's how you shape up and how you can do things a bit differently. I think playing for Celtic, you don't defend as much as you defend for other teams. There's good defenders that play for other teams who would like doing a job for Celtic, but we find it difficult. Because although I've kind of said, I don't think the standard of Scottish Rovers is particularly good this season, when you look at the defence, actually, defences are coached pretty well, I think. You know, that on balance, I think they do okay. I mean, if they're playing against teams who are far superior to them than they're playing the big two, they don't lose a lot of goals. I mean, there's not many absolute hammerings of teams these days. You know, they won't get me on there, but they defend pretty well. So that's always been an Achilles heel for Celtic. Because of the way Celtic play, it's always an Achilles heel. Again, I get back to this, you know, acting haste, repent and leisure. I don't think who we've got there should be there, but they are there, and it is what it is, and there's only five games to go. So I think Narossi's a better player, but whether the manager thinks that Scales has got that partnership with Carter Vickers, and that's the least riskier thing of the two, so we'll probably maybe go with Scales. But as you say, we're suspect down that left-hand side, and that's a concern. But I just think if our offensive players do the business, then, you know, if you lose a goal or two, it won't matter because they've scored four or five. I think that's been the big concern this season for me.
Yeah, and you made a point there, Jim, regarding the actual through ball. Stop that, and the danger is averted. And I don't think we're very good at that if Maeder's not in the wing, in terms of the wing play. Palmer, for example, giving that ball away cheaply, it's not a dig just for the sake of a dig at Palmer, because I don't think he's got that mentality whereby, Brian, you spoke about it, that there's going to be an occasion in the next six games where, let's say we go behind, right, and we're sitting 65, 70 minutes into a game and we're 1-0 down. I would expect, because of what we've seen, based on what Jim says, based on our knowledge of this team, I would expect in the next six games for us to be facing that situation, 65, 70 minutes in. And it's at that point, Brian, that you're looking at every single one of your players to be this warrior that Liam Scales spoke about in the first Glasgow derby, where in terms of the defence, you know, we were so short at the back for central defenders that we had to sign an emergency defender and even he was injured when the game came round, and we had to have Warriors. There's some players I don't think have got that in them. Now, I'm not saying they never will. It's something that can be implemented as part of a culture at a football club. You know, dressing room culture on the training pitch on a daily basis, where if you're the odd one out, you then become, obviously, if you're going to stay there, you need to embrace that culture and become that warrior or that winner. There's, at the moment, one or two players I don't think have got that in their mentality. Is it a case of just don't play them for the next five league games in the Scottish Cup final? Is it a case of, you know, use the players that you know? They might not necessarily be as gifted as some of these guys I'm talking about, but you know that they're going to do a job and you know that they're not going to hide in a scenario like that one I've just mentioned.
100%. And I suspect that's entirely what he'll do. In terms of just quickly to go back to the Liam Scales thing, I think he's been really let down by the midfield and by Taylor, to be fair, because he's very exposed as well. So, yes, I agree with Jim. I don't think he's what you want moving forward. But I think, you know, he's done well considering, because I think Taylor's been poor this season. I think Yang is awful, if I'm honest. I don't think he's got it. I know people quite like him. I don't see it. And when May, there's no playing, to your point, Paul, that left side's really exposed. Mm-hmm. And when you watch it, Taylor inverts more than Johnson does. So a lot of times it scales, you know, he's getting doubled up upon and he's having to do his best. So I think he's done well considering, and I think that's probably why Brendan thinks, you know, he's the guy that's going to fit, because I also agree with Jim that I think Narowski's the better player. I actually quite like him. I think there's a player in there. But I understand why Rodgers would pick Scales, because he might go on and on. To your point, when we're up against this here, when the pressure's on, these guys can handle it. And that's why I think if Nieda can't start against Dundee, it has to be Forrest starting. For me, I've been sort of saying a few times Forrest should start. I wanted to call the Celtic Supporters Club down here, the Jimmy Forrest CSE, because I think he's a legend, he deserves a bit of recognition. But I think he should start, because, yeah, he might not have the legs to he, but he's so clever. And he does get the ball, he's still a good out ball. He's underrated for his strength as well. He's a strong player, he can hold it up. And when he picks a pass, it normally lands. You know, he's not the riskiest of players, so he was more calculated with his passing. So I would have him, and I think I would be comfortable if these guys were in there, the sort of almost battle-hardened, that have got that wee bit of experience to say, right, yeah, we're two goals down in the first 20 minutes. There's plenty of time.
Hold on. Cut that bit. Two goals down.
No, but again, in that scenario, you want guys that are, do you know what I mean? Like, look at the, what do you call it, the semi-final there. So I thought Aberdeen deserved massive credit. Yeah. Obviously, we get in a goal early. Aberdeen start attacking. You go, it's only a goal, it's early. But if that happened in the 88th minute, and we went 1-0 down, you need guys that can go, it's fine. There's still plenty of time here. No guys that sort of panicking, go, right, we need to get the ball quickly, or we need to cross it here. And this is what I mean. And that's why I think guys like Forrest and the sort of trusted guys should and will play for, again, provided Nia does no fit, for the rest of the games. Because I think you have to. I really think you do. Because the pressure's going to be insane. I mean, even against Dundee, right, say, we go. It's a decent team. The boy McCown is a good player for them. I watched him against Rangers. He was excellent, that lad. And they played really well, Dundee. They're a decent side. If we go there and it's, you know, we've no scored early goals, that's a lot of pressure, because you can't slip up now. They've had a lot of grief for dropping points and their mentality. We need to make sure we win. And you can't panic and you can't flap and you've got to see it out. So it might not be pretty, but we've got to have the guys there that you know, we can be in the trenches with, and you can rely on each other, even if maybe they're not the most talented footballers at the club.
Being in the trenches, I mean, again, I've said this so many times, talking to people in football, I've never been in a competitive dressing room, but to be able to look to your left and your right and know that they guys, you can rely on them, Brian, right? And that breeds that confidence going into these games. I don't want to write players off just for the sake of writing them off, but I've not seen any of that mentality in the likes of Yang, like you say. My only concern with regards to Forrest is what Brendan said about his minutes on the park. And by the way, I know that 32 is not old, even for a footballer now in modern times. You look at a lot of these players playing right into their late 30s. but he has had a lot of injuries, hasn't he, over the years, over the 15 seasons now that he's been playing for Celtic. So I don't know if he'll start. I would love to be able to start him and play him for the first hour of every game. And then you're bringing on maybe Palmer or Yang to come in and then run at a tired defender, because I still think they're a bit wet behind the ears, the two of them. So I would love that the Forest that we know, and we know he can make that impact, I'd love him to start. But I think it's going to be flipped and he'll be the guy to come on for the last 30 minutes, unfortunately. And when he does, he can make an impact. I've got brilliant wee message for your pal. I mean, you've probably already heard this, but on the point he made, he's that quick that his hamstring probably healed before he pulled it, because Brendan Rodgers has revealed that Maeda has made a miraculous recovery from his injury. And although they're not expecting him to be in the squad this weekend, he is coming back before you know it. Like, who do we play in his place? So that's a big question. We spoke about Scales, and I think most of us were agreeing that you play him because, let's be honest, right, he has got the mentality that you're talking about. There are frailties to his game. It might be more of a risk to throw in a replacement. Unless, can I just say this, guys? Unless it's Welsh. I think, you know what? I think Welsh alongside Carter Vickers, you don't even notice he's there. And that's a good thing. He just kind of mops up. He does his job. But in any case, I'm going to go with Scales. What about the replacement for Maeda, though, Lloyd? I'll start with yourself. We've got quite a few options there. We've spoken about mentality versus...
Paul's dropped out there.
Yep.
Or is that just...
The gaffer's frozen.
Sorry, just run with it, guys. If I please, just
the gaffer's frozen.
He's been hacked.
Well, yeah. It's not trolls. Maeda. Who is it you go for?
That's a great question, because I'm kind of now... I mean, I like Yang. I don't know why I like Yang, but I just don't see what he brings to this team, because to me, he just loses the ball constantly. Any time he goes forward near that final third, he loses the ball, tries all the flicks and tricks, and just doesn't do anything tracking back. Palmer's so inconsistent. It's unbelievable. Yeah, crops up with a goal and assist now and again, but once again, I don't see anything in his game where... It excites me watching him as a footballer. So, and I get Brian's point, obviously, on James Forrest, but I don't see James Forrest being the man that can start the game, last the full 90 minutes, because his age and obviously the history of injuries. So, you kind of are tossed up just between Yang and Palm at the minute, whilst Maeda's out. So, if you're going to pick one, you probably would pick Palmer. On that aspect, just because what he can create in a game, nothing, but he's not an exciting footballer to watch at all.
Right, guys, I don't know how that was for you, but yous all just froze, and for a few moments I was thinking to myself, yous were just listening intently to what I was saying. But then it became clear that you couldn't hear me. So, brilliant, you just ran with it. That's tremendous. Jim, I guess also the conversation we need to be why we're not talking about Kuhn, because it seems as though he's guaranteed a jersey when we're talking about the wingers, because we're only talking about the left-hand side.
So if we play the best team, man, I agree with Brian, and to go back to my horse analogy, you go for the course and distance winners, and an hour out of Forest is better than 92 of Yang and 92 of Palmer. He showed last week, he came on and he did what Yang should have been doing, get the ball, run at people, cut inside, make things happen. I mean, Yang was... completely inefficient last week. I think Yang is a bit overawed with things, playing at a big club like Celtic. I think he's a guy that maybe if you gave him half a dozen games on the trot, you might see something happen, but we can't afford to give him half a dozen games on the trot. I think Palmer thinks he's made it. That's the kind of impression I get. He's at a big club and he can do his Insta and his TikTok and he's getting paid a lot of money. And
you know we're on Insta now, Jim, by the way.
Is that a good thing?
Hello, Insta.
We're on Insta. We might have made it. Who knows?
Us in Palmer. I think Yang, you know, is finding it difficult. I think he's overwhelmed by it because we're depending on him. And he's not had that before. Palmer, as I said, I think he's just a bit too big for his boots at the moment. Can't depend on it. But James Forrest, when he came on last week, changed the game basically up to then. What we do need in these last six games is intensity and pace, and going at team. We can't afford to play the way we've played most of the season with this tippy-tappy around the back. And we can't do that. We really can't do that. If we do that and we don't win the league, we deserve not to win the league. Because we showed in that 25 minutes after James Forrest won last week, we could have scored 3 or 4 and finished the game. And that's how we got to start the game against Dundee. Forrest will be all day long. And if we do tire them out and Yang or Palmer gets a better chance to run at people, albeit fine. Kuhn, I think Kuhn has actually done really well. Good burst of speed. Got the goal last week. Looks a pretty confident dude. I think he's okay. So I think he's a stick on for that right-hand side. And Forrest certainly for the left. But yeah, we have to play, as you said earlier, the ones who we think we can depend on. And you can always depend on James Forrest. You can always depend on him. We can't depend on Palmer. We can't depend on Yang. I think if they're on different teams at different stages, then you maybe different players. I think if Yang came into Ange's team last year, or Palmer came into Yang, Palmer came into Ange's team last year, they'd be different. But we're depending on them this year. There's been so many games because we've been so inconsistent and we can't seem to play two halves of football. There's been bits of the game where we're really dependent on you, Palmer, really dependent on Yang, and they haven't really stepped up to the mark, I think. So that's my concern. The mark also comes the fact that the bench isn't that great. You know, who would you bring on? Ida, apart from Ida, Wata maybe comes on to help shore up a game, but we don't have the options we had before, and that's a concern. Again, getting back to the recruitment and who I've signed and whatnot, but what was the question? Kuhn, yeah. Kuhn, for me, definitely. I think he's played really well the last few games. He played well last week. And James on the left. I think they pick themselves. I'd be astonished if he doesn't. I'd be annoyed if he goes with Yang and he's just as ineffective as he was last week. Or Palmer. Because he showed last week. And it was astonishing when he took James Forrest off. Because even though Palmer had just come off, I thought, well, take Palmer off. You know, and then Palmer then does what Palmer does.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. See, the thing with Kuhn, what I like about him, what I've noticed, is that even when things aren't working out for him, he never hides. He goes again. And it's coming back to that mentality thing. And I think that, you know, he's maybe not got as much tricks as Palmer. He's maybe not got that kind of flair. Although I do think that when he's running at a couple of defenders, it becomes a natural thing for him. He seems to kind of slalom through them. But he's got a character about him, which I love, and I'm sure a manager loves that as well. You know, you can rely on him to basically dust himself down and get back up. He, for me, starts for the rest of the season unless there's a massive drop-off in form. And whenever we can use Forrest, we use him. For me, all the wingers we've spoken about, Yang's the bottom of the queue at the moment for me, simply because the performance against Aberdeen, the performance against Rangers, nowhere near it. Palmer does have something in him where, you know what, he might, between now and the end of the season, I would even predict that he's going to score an important goal for us. He's that type of guy. But I don't think he's going to have a 90-minute performance that's going to get him the man of the match. That's where I am. And, of course, there's the other option just before we move on, Brian. There's another option. You're pushing Kyogo out there. We're not counting Kyogo's goals this season now. It's not like his season's been written off, but, play either through the middle. Play Kyogo on the left. I know that Kyogo doesn't give you the same defensive protection of someone like Maeda, but I tell you, he can link play from midfield to front. He's brilliant at that.
He is, but I think he's wasted. I think if you really need him occupying the defenders, because a lot of it, Kyogo's not scored as many goals this season, but what he always does is drag people out of position. He always allows the midfielders to be creative and give them space and give the wingers space. I think if you put him out wide, I think he's easy to isolate. Like, I think if you're playing him as a striker and he's all over the place, you can't mark him. You can't control him. I think if you put him out wide, he can be marked out in a way that, say, Maeda can, because Maeda's just pace and power. So for me, I go to disagree there. I would have Kyogo in it. And I don't think at this stage, as much as I've been saying in the past about changing shape and stuff, I don't think you can do it now. I think you have to go, like, this is what we're doing. This is of these roles. It needs to be better. It needs to be quicker. You know, get the ball past it. So a bit more intensity to it, but I don't think you can tweak it too much now. And to be fair to Big Ida, like, he's got an air of Samaras about him, and that there's times where I think he looks amazing, and there's times where I go, big man, how are you not scoring that? What's going on? Like, it's so frustrating. Don't get me wrong, he's not as good looking as Samaras, but who is? But the big fella, he worries me slightly, and I know he's super young, and I do think we should sign him, by the way, but when you talk about relying on, I think he's better off the bench, the big man, where maybe he goes, right, I can either save the day or I just need to ride it out. I think starting him and shifting Kyogo, because say we do that and it's not working, what do you do? Then you're back to square one again. So I'm not 100% convinced about that. And I think Ida's a better option off the bench. But for me, Kyogo has to start up front now, just because, again, the wee man's got, he's so good at defending from the front as well. And we will need that. Like, to Jim's point, when Rodgers took off Forrest against Aberdeen, I couldn't believe it. I think I put in the Axon group chat a few expletives about it, actually. I thought it was a crazy decision. And then obviously it turned out that way because Aberdeen scored. And I just think if you've got Kyogo up there, when you take him off, the defenders on the other team just go, all right, if things just go a wee bit easier. And we're not in a position with these games to go, which will be hard games and will be tense games. There's no room for error.
Also, it wasn't the first mad substitution of the season. And I think
you've mentioned this before, Jim.
Yeah, if we'd have lost that game last Saturday, people would have questioned that. Why would you do that? Why would you have all that space in the world? I think Kyogo has suffered the most of any of the players because of the style of football this season and the poor wingers that we have, and the fact that there's been a lot of games people have said that he's not played very well. He's not been in the game because nobody's making him chances. So I agree with Brian. You have to always start Kyogo, but you have to give him the chance. You give him the chance, he's going to score 9 times out of 10. And that's where Kuhn and that's where Forrest have to do that for the next 6 games. Just make him chances and he'll score. And I like Ida as well. I think he's been pretty good. He's a lot better than I thought he was going to be. And the Hibs game, he stood up in the last minute, put the ball. That's huge in the context of the season.
And he
won at Ibrox and he was outstanding. He ran them ragged, scored a great goal. So, I mean, you're watching that game, you're thinking, well, is he a better bet in the next derby, given how much of torturous time he gave them? Don't know.
See, but the thing, John,
you mentioned there, Kyogo as well, to be fair. I think Kyogo's really missed the tatty in terms of that creativity.
Definitely,
the thing with Kyogo I was going to mention on the back of Jim's point there, Brian, was the fact that I always have a bit of crack about Taylor. Taylor's not happy about something. Everybody knows about it, right? Because he throws the arms up and he's got the grimace and all this. Right? He does all that, right? Kyogo doesn't. And see the frustration he must feel at times when he's making the runs, right? And he's not being found. And I remember there was a camera shot. It was like from the opposite end. And it was showing you the runs that Kyogo was making. And nobody was picking him out. And so I totally agree with that.
Every single game, every home game this season, he makes about a dozen runs during the game and nobody passes to him. And we might just back again.
Just shrugs his shoulders and gets on with
it. That's why we need better players at the back and better players in midfield who are in tune with him. And you're right, Brian, Hatate is in tune with him. And hopefully in the last 5 games, we'll see a few kind of wonder passes out to Kyogo. Jota was totally in tune with Kyogo as well.
Yeah.
And that's what we need. And that's what he's missed. And it's not that he's had a bad season, but he could have such a much, much better season if he'd more service.
See, this is another thing that came out of this chat with Brendan, right, was the fact that it was raised in relation to that, Jim, the fact that Kyogo's not been getting found the way that he had been when we had the likes of Jota on the wing. And it seemed from a fan's perspective that it was almost as if we were playing the wingers differently and it was affecting Kyogo. I remember having the conversation on here many times. It was like, you know, we've killed Kyogo because the service has dried up. And Brendan Rodgers stated that this is not something that they have tried to implement. They've not tried to change the role of the wingers. And in actual fact, the coaches are working really hard with them, telling them it's not about cutting and it's about doing that. So that, I thought that was interesting as well, because we're now going into the end of April, they're still doing it. So if you're a coach and you're telling somebody on a training pitch day in, day out, go and stop doing that, right? Because the wee man's making that run and I want you to do it this way. Go, hit the line, bring it. If they're not doing it now, that concerns me about the quality of the wingers. I've been impressed with Kuhn and I've been impressed with Ida. I think there's been a different sense of the signings that came in January compared to the ones in the summer. And I think sitting here, we've not won anything yet, right? So I'm not counting my chickens. But some of the moments that Ida has been involved in so far, you think of the 2 penalties at Easter Road, you think about the 2 goals against Motherwell, the goal against Rangers, even stepping up as a young guy, relatively, to take that penalty, the first penalty, whilst he was injured, he hobbled away. I think he's shown a lot of courage and he's shown enough for me that I would be interested in signing him. I've no idea what the fee's going to be. Listen, I'm sorry for the commenters. I've not brought as many up as I would have liked, so I'm going to concentrate on them for a moment. Pete McGee wearing a vintage
Paul's cast again.
He's been a game.
Just on the comment, then I'll step in and be a mini Paul for a second.
Bring me back. Just run with it. Hey guys, David Day. I'm back.
Bryce misses a good chance.
Oh, sorry. People just want to unplug me as I start to go on a roll. 1300 live. Pete McGee, CCV, and Starfield didn't lose when they started together. Tells you all you need to know. I think domestically they had that record. It was a
tells you all you need to know about Carter Vickers.
Yeah,
because Starfield lost a few games when Carter Vickers wasn't playing. So
the thing is, Brian, I call it the Van Dijk effect. It's clear that whoever's playing with Carter Vickers is kind of like the second in command, if you like. Right, he's always going to bring the levels up. But we can buy somebody that complements Carter Vickers a wee bit better.
Should have, yeah.
I think we can. Pat O, I do not. I did not go to Middlesbrough FC because my girlfriend was Miss World. What a wasted opportunity! Well, come on, Pat, to play at the World Cup. He will be ever forever known as one of the greatest players never to play. As will Jinky, even though he was in the squad, Jim, wasn't he? He wasn't used. Mm-hmm. Was it the 1974 World Cup, Jim?
Yeah.
Jimmy Johnson. Yeah. The Maltese Falcon. Got to say, that's a great name. Now is the time for three quality stellar signing statement of intent. I'm talking about bringing in.
Well, you go, Brian, your chance. Go,
Brian, now.
Go, Brian.
Paul's talking about bringing in at least five signings.
At least five signings and decent Wi-Fi. That's what we need in the summer. Titanium Tam, great night last night, guys. Thanks for coming along. Martin didn't disappoint. For people of my vintage, Martin changed it up here, and it's never changed apart from a few wee blips here and there. You're absolutely right. And what I'm going to say on the Instagram, Barazat and Design have actually tuned in today. A big shout out to the guys because their staff was brilliant. The venue is outstanding. Even if it's not a Celtic-related night, go and visit them on match day or if you're in the area. They are just behind. It's called Carlton Entry. They're just behind the Barras. Live venue. Go and play, pay them a visit. Absolutely brilliant. Rogers wanted power.
Brian.
Go, Brian.
Go, Brian.
Rogers wanted power. What did they get? Lagerbeer.
That's Lagerbeer. See what happens if I die out, Brian just jumps in and saves my bacon.
Plan.
So there we go.
Oh, he's gone again.
Go, Brian. Yeah,
every time you go, he comes back in.
I know, so it's a curse. I think it's about time to wind up anyway, gents. That's just over the hour.
No, I can't let you wind up with everybody laughing at me. So, Lloyd, thanks for your support. Brian, thanks for running with it. Obviously, somebody's playing a PS5 somewhere next door. But we will wrap it up there, and we will be back for the match day, as always, half an hour before kickoff against Dundee. I've got to thank 1300 to 1400 of you for tuning in live. And whatever the issue is, I'll get that sorted out from this end. Join us again for the match day. Enjoy your weekend. Thank you to Brian, Jim and Lloyd for joining me on A Celtic State of Mind.
Cheers, Paul.
Podcast Network.